Views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much, and welcome back. Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Jennifer Moore. She is the Northumberland County CAO, and she has been with the county, I've got about 9 years, I think she says. But we'll get all that information from her in just a few minutes. Before we get to that, we will play a track relevant to what we're talking about. And since she is the CAO, and we're going to be talking about all the interesting stuff happening in the county for the next year, let's go to BTO and Taking Care of Business on Truly Local Radio Northumberland 89.7. We'll be right back after this.
Thank you.
Taking Care of Business, BTO from 1976, right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Joining me in the studio are Northumberland County CEO Jennifer Moore and Rob Washburn. Listeners, it's after 6. It's Wednesday. It's time to consider this. And our lines are open at 905-372-2321. If you have any questions or comments, maybe you want to send us a tweet, you can send Rob a tweet at rwash and myself at legan66. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Glad to have you in here. And, well, how was your New Year's? Got to ask you that first of all. A brand new year, how was everything?
It's great. A little chilly, but good.
Did you enjoy any of the first night events that were scheduled? Or?
I was celebrating with my family.
There you go. There's nothing like family, especially on freezing cold nights. I mean, it would have been nice to have a horse and carriage ride or whatever, but too darn cold. Rob, welcome back.
Thanks, Dave. Happy New Year.
Welcome to 2018. And this is our fourth year doing this, by the way, listeners. 4 years for us asking you to consider this. I hope you are considering it, by the way. Rob, you were so instrumental in getting this interview, so I want to thank you for that. By the way, for those of you that don't know, most of our interviews and our guests are as a result of Rob's diligence. And he pounds the phones. So thanks for that. And I know you want to start the conversation.
Yeah, I do, because I originally invited the warden to come and join us today, and he wasn't able to make it, so Jennifer has so generously agreed to step in. And we're going to talk about county stuff, but the first thing, of course, weather's been a huge issue, Jennifer, and the cold has meant for a lot of people who are homeless created a very serious situation, and we've been watching Toronto as they've been struggling to provide shelter. But I know down here we're also facing a bit of a troubling time. The transition house has been closed temporarily, and where are people finding shelter in this brutal cold at this time of year without the transition house, and what's the county doing?
The county plays an instrumental role in homelessness. It's it is mandated by the province that we take a lead on that. But we work closely with all of our community partners, and that's really what happened when Transition House did have to close down just before the holidays. The county took a lead in mobilizing all of our community partners. They brought them together. They continue to provide regular updates. There was a check-in late as this morning, mm-hmm. Letting us know how things were going. All the individuals that were in Transition House were able to be placed in accommodation. Those accommodations vary depending on their specific needs, but with all of the community partners, they work together and they're continuing to monitor that situation.
Now, I understand, though, that not everybody was able to be housed at Transition House, and there are people that are out in the communities, not just in the urban areas, but also in the rural areas, that don't have a permanent place to live, that might be out in this terrible cold having to survive. What's being done to help those people?
There are a number of resources, and a lot of that comes through the community partners. They certainly monitor and have outreach and look for ways that they can support them. There are areas, we heard some of our local communities set up warming centers and things like that over the holidays and made that available to some of the public. Certainly the county is available. We do have our community and social services department. Anyone that reaches out to them, they can certainly direct them to any assistance that's available, and that'll be tailored to that individual's needs.
Now, does the county have any policies around temperature and mandatory opening of warming centers?
That's not led by the county, but many of our member municipalities will do that at a local municipal level. And we heard, I know particularly the town of Cobourg had a number of centers that they were promoting through the media over the last number of days. The county doesn't typically have those types of mm-hmm. facilities, but a lot of our member municipalities are able to do that in some of their community centers and centers like that.
How come it's one of the few things that because the county is with housing, that the county doesn't have a policy or sort of oversee this county-wide, so that, for example, if it was necessary in this temperature, everybody would have to do it? Why is it left up to the individual municipalities in this regard?
It's just kind of, I guess there's a number of responsibilities that fall to each of the levels, and we do try and work together. We collaborate mm-hmm. on a lot of different processes and services that we provide, and in this case, it's something that opening up as some sort of a warming center is simply something that our member municipalities do, and they tend to have more facilities that are suited to that, such as community centers and arenas. Those aren't typically operated mm-hmm. at the county level, so so they're able to accommodate those that need a little bit better.
Really interesting, Dave. I don't know if you were tracking this, but over Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day, it was so cold, and yet the CCC wasn't open, and I don't believe the mall was open either. And usually those are the two warming centers that were.
The mall was open.
Was it open as a warming center?
But I know it's interesting that you mentioned the mall because my wife was talking to a customer at Spark, and she was saying that they had gone to the mall. The mall was listed as a warming center, and there were a group of teenagers out there huddled, freezing in the cold, sharing a Hot Pocket, apparently. And this woman had asked the security guard, like, what the hell? I thought the mall was a warming station. And he said, oh, they're just teenagers.
Yeah.
So, which is weird, right? I mean, if it's a warming station, it's open to everyone. But apparently, if you're a teenager and the security guard apparently gets to make those determinations, who gets to freeze out in the cold, apparently. So it's, that is alarming to me. And especially, you know, the CCC, as you said, was, I think it was closed for the 2 days.
Yeah.
For the Christmas, for Christmas and for New Year's, which, by the way, were two of the coldest days.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any sense. But again, a lot of municipalities are facing this. I know in Toronto, the mayor has been taking a lot of heat, and there have been a number of stories there about, because their report is, you know, people are trying to get into these places, these facilities. Mm-hmm. They've been turned away because there's no beds. Yeah. And then it turns around that the numbers provided by the government were completely different. So we haven't had that here.
Is there any indication when Transition House will be reopening? Have you heard anything on timelines?
No, we don't have any specific information yet, so we're continuing to, again, work with mm-hmm. partners and try and ensure that any individuals in need of assistance are placed somewhere appropriate until we get word from the Transition House Board.
Now, our audience might not know who these partners are, so could you just name a couple of them so that people might recognize a few of them?
Yeah, we'll work with agencies like the Salvation Army, Cornerstone, Family Violence Center, Greenwood Coalition. There's a number of groups like that throughout our community that we would partner with, and we have long-standing relationships with all of those organizations, and certainly we have what we've seen in to look at homelessness, I guess, in a bit bigger picture. Starting in late 2016, we did our 20,000 homes campaign, mm-hmm. and did the point in time count. It really helped us get a lot better understanding of what homelessness mm-hmm. looks like in our community. And it's something that over the last year, since we've seen the results of that survey, we're really taking a step back and looking how we deliver our programs, mm-hmm. Continuing to build the relationships, making sure that the county and all of our partners are with the same set of priorities. We're moving ahead in the same direction. We're prioritizing need and those sorts of things in the same manner. We're assessing clients in a similar way.
What was the biggest takeaway from that study that you had? I mean, because I know when we talked to Lou Rinaldi in the past, and he's been, I mean, the members of Parliament in Ontario, they don't believe that homelessness exists in rural Ontario. But you've done a study, and mm-hmm. of course it does. And that includes people who are couch surfing, right?
Yes, absolutely.
It includes people who are staying with a friend. How do you respond to the numbers? I mean, obviously they were substantial and a little higher than would have been expected.
Well, actually, I can give you the numbers. So what we found was that there was 59 individuals and 18 families were identified as homeless. That was in November of 2016. So on that particular week, mm-hmm. The other part of that is there was an additional 179 individuals and 48 families that were at a significant risk of becoming homeless. And we need to look at that whole picture. It's both those that are currently homeless and those that are at risk. And I think what some of the data, it had many layers to it. Mm-hmm. We learned some of the barriers to permanent housing that people are experiencing and really helping us to start to tailor some of our programs so that we're addressing some of those barriers, looking at the importance of housing first, getting people housed and making sure that we have some resources and facilities available so that we can start to look at that. And there's been more and more research done across the country. We're really tapping into that and learning how we can start to monitor and tailor and make sure that we're keeping current and our programs are addressing the most current thinking in
when you say barriers, though, what can you be a little more specific to what those barriers might be?
What we found is that people have it they were divided into some different categories, and it might be as simple as some financial issues and things that were fairly short term. They needed to get on their feet, and they needed a light touch is the way staff might have described those particular cases. Mm-hmm. There's others that have very complex cases. They could have mental health issues or addiction issues or many things that they needed assistance and support with in their life to ensure that they're able to be in a stable housing situation. Those folks need a lot more supports. They need a wraparound type of support system where perhaps multiple agencies in individuals need to help them to a place where they can have stable housing.
Well, I know that in the city of Toronto they do things like subsidize rent for low-income Ontarians. So whether they're on assistance or not, if they're just at the poverty level, the municipality in Toronto anyway is offering a helping hand. Is that something the county offers as well? Do we subsidize rent for low-income individuals as well to support them?
Yes, there's a number of different programs that we have. Of course, the programs are fairly complex, with each program looking at different types of needs and different situations. Mm-hmm. And most of that funding comes through the province with some types of parameters around how we distribute that funding, and the county administers all of that. So part of those programs is subsidizing rent.
Now, I know that the county is also responsible for land use planning. Mm-hmm. And what sort of plans are on the books to see some affordable housing being created across the county?
It's a two-part management process for land use planning. So the county has an overarching responsibility, but each one of the member municipalities also have land use planning responsibilities. So it really is a partnership in making sure that the county official plans are complementary to what our member municipalities have. The province has recently made some changes to some of the legislation around land use planning, and as municipalities are looking at updating their official plans and their local bylaws, I think we'll start to see a reflection of what the province has done. So that would be things like looking at secondary suites and some opportunities like that previously were not as supported as what they are in some of the newer legislation. So those things are really just starting to get rolled out. In 2017, in the summertime, we did host a housing symposium, and we brought together social services staff. We brought together a lot of staff from member municipalities, particularly in the planning area, as well as some political representation. We also had a number of guest speakers and experts from some organizations like CMHC, the provincial ministries that work with these areas in starting to explore how the legislation is changing and how we can start to update our policies here.
Do you see any political will to implement an affordable housing strategy within Northumberland? I mean, you look at it from a bureaucrat's point of view, and obviously that's to stand back and make recommendations. But do you see the political will in things like your symposium and other places that is sincere that they want to bring more affordable housing, create more affordable housing within Northumberland?
I think that they certainly want a strategy and a plan, and we're seeing at the county level in particular tremendous support from our councillors when we look at our strategies, when we brought forward the results of the 20,000 Homes campaign and started to get some clarity around what homelessness looks like in our community. Certainly our councillors were very supportive in starting to develop and develop policies and ways that we can address that.
So how much of that support, though, is based on a publicly funded response? I mean, so often we have heard over the last 20 years about the three P's, the private-public partnerships, and there has been some movement there. And I know there was an initiative that was supposed to build some subsidized housing in a development that was being done at Division and King, for instance. But none of that appears to have come really to fruition. Is there an appetite for a publicly funded social housing program, or are we dependent on this idea of the three P's?
Right now, we do have one that is a private development that has a significant amount of public funding. That's on Monroe Street. They're currently under construction, mm-hmm. And that'll be about 30 units that'll be hopefully available I guess probably later this year, depending on how construction goes.
30 subsidized housing units.
They would be affordable housing.
Affordable housing. Okay.
So that building would be primarily geared towards seniors, which, as we know, that's a significant part of our population here. We don't have any plans right now for any new construction, but the county does currently operate 344 social housing units that we own, and then we have another over 500 that we provide funding for that are delivered by nonprofit agencies. So that already exists in our community. As we start to go through the results of the programs, then we'll start to see how in other ways that we're subsidizing. Private landlords are also a big part of that, and being willing to house individuals that may have some barriers to homelessness, and building those partnerships is a critical part, as well as the support programs that we have to ensure that once an individual is placed into a housing situation, they're able to be successful with that, and making sure that it's not simply funding the housing, but it's funding all of the supports that go around that to make those individuals successful.
I know a number of individuals and activist groups have gone around to the various councils claiming that there is a crisis in Northumberland. Would you characterize it as such?
I think from a staff perspective, we recognize there's definitely a need, and homelessness does exist. We wouldn't use the term crisis. Certainly there's need, and there's ways of that we're trying to address that. There's some more information and reports that'll be coming forward in the coming weeks and months as we continue to delve into what we already have, and hopefully we'll be able to start to tweak some programs and address that going forward and help address the need that's there.
And on that note, we'll take our first break of the hour. We are a pleasure to have you here for Consider This Live, and we will be right back on Trinity Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
It's Only Words is your chance to win. I'm Pete Smith, host of Post Meridian, and every Tuesday at 1:30 you can win free movie passes to the Rainbow Cinema at the Northumberland Mall. I read the lyrics, you identify the song, and the passes are yours. It's that easy. So listen every Tuesday at 1:30 for
It's Only Words.
Right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. The cold reality of winter is upon us. Say it isn't so, but it's the perfect time to ensure your home comfort system keeps you warm and toasty throughout the winter months. If your furnace is more than 10 years old, it's a great time to consider a new and more reliable one for only $35.99 per month, and don't pay a penny for 6 months. Give yourself complete peace of mind by calling Northumberland's home comfort experts, Pritchard's Climate Care, right now. Call 905-885-8216 or visit us at PritchardMechanical.com.
Northumberland 89.7 is different. We provide a variety of music and talk programs you won't hear anywhere else, hosted by volunteers who live and shop in our community. Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. You're listening to Consider This Live on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. My guest in the studio is Jennifer Moore. She is the Northumberland County CAO. Now, we're just talking about homelessness and affordable housing, which takes us to a very important part of today's conversation, which is the budget, right? I mean, that's where those numbers really come into play. Rob, I know you have some questions on that.
I do, definitely. Thanks, Dave. I'm curious about the budget process. The way it went, you passed yours, probably one of the first municipal organizations to do so. Could you just generally describe what took place, the top line items that took place for the budget for 2018, please?
Well, our budget is not technically passed yet. The way our process works, it's a very lengthy process. We usually start about May, June of each year, and that will be largely done at the staff level to start to gather data and put it together. This year we introduced a public consultation component, which was a request from some of the local ratepayer groups. We hadn't done that explicitly before. We held that early on in the process. really it's most beneficial to learn what some of their concerns and interests are before we start crunching all the numbers and what they'd like us to consider and think about as we move forward. Through the summer months and into the early fall, there's a lot of staff meetings, discussions, analysis that's done. We learn a lot about what the province is doing, what might impact us with funding, all of those kinds of pieces of information. We look at some capital projects and what we need there. We also have regular meetings. We have a couple of counselors assigned to each department, and we have some conversations with them where they can provide some feedback. If there's things that they think we need to provide more information on or need to dig a little deeper, they provide that, and we go away and do that by October, November. We're consolidating and looking at the final numbers. We presented that to County Council at our December Council meeting. So all of the detail of the budget is currently posted on our website. There is a lot of information there. If folks are interested in going through that, it's organized by department. And then in January, we will be asking County Council to provide the approval of that, and then we'll approve tax rates in that in February or March.
Yeah, I believe it's a more than 100-page document to go through.
It's a big binder.
For the brave of heart.
What was the single largest cost to the county in 2017, and is that going to still be the single largest cost in 2018?
I guess it depends on how you define. So are you, our largest expenditure?
The biggest expenditure, yeah.
Our largest expenditure item is staffing.
Right.
And that's the services that we're in. We have a lot of services that are people services. We have long-term care. We have paramedics. That's a lot of staffing in order to deliver the service to the public. So that's always our biggest cost from year to year. When we look at when we measure our departments in different ways, our largest budget department would be community and social services.
Right.
They obviously put a lot out into the community. We talk about our homelessness and how we support those in need in our community. So that's a significant program there. They also receive a significant amount of provincial grant funding through that. When we look at our capital program, roads and bridges are where the biggest part of our capital dollars go. So when you ask what's the biggest, it depends on how we measure the biggest.
Well, I know the listeners out there, and I can think of one listener in particular whose biggest complaint is always the same. It's waste. It's government waste. And so I'm sure that'll be the question we get if we do get a question from one of our callers. And I know the phone keeps ringing. We get one ring and then it hangs up, so I don't know what's going on with that. But if you're trying to get through, please continue. 905-372-2321 is the number.
So since we're talking about wages, minimum wage has gone up as of January. Did you do any anticipated policy around that, and what kind of an impact is it having on the county?
We did. We spent some significant time making sure that we could understand what the impacts of the legislation would be. There was actually some the county council did weigh in on their concerns.
The
draft legislation that was originally put forward, it talked about some impacts that were going to be very significant for our emergency workers, so volunteer firefighters, which are not at the county level, but member municipalities, as well as snowplow operators, that type of emergency response. That component of the legislation was amended at final reading, but still we are anticipating, we've got a placeholder in our 2018 budget of about $200,000. So not nearly as significant as the original drafts of the legislation had been, but we will see some impact of the changes in legislation. Not so much minimum wage itself, but some of the other ancillary impacts.
Sure. Now, you mentioned as part of the process that you did a public consultation. Can you give us an example of something that you were told in the public consultations that followed through and made it into the final draft budget?
To be quite frank, we had very little input from the public. Mm-hmm. We did an open house evening. We had about a dozen individuals that came out. We did that as a presentation. Mm-hmm. And then we had a number of our senior staff there so that there could be one-on-one conversation and discussion about all things related to county operations. We had some surveys and feedback forums available to the public. Mm-hmm. We allowed them to either complete complete them that evening or send them in. We only received one.
One.
One. And there really wasn't a lot particularly specific in there to follow through on.
Now, do you find that surprising, especially with at the lower level where we have very active citizen groups at many municipalities?
We may have active citizen groups. I want to respond to what you're saying before you even answer his question, because I've been to those public consultation meetings for the local budget here in the town. And, I mean, the last three my wife and I attended, it was her and I, a couple of people from the media, staffers, a couple of counselors, and that was it. Oh, and Mark Rockburn from TV Kojiko. Okay. That's it. I mean, for whatever reason, and I don't know what it is, maybe people are just so happy with what the county's doing that they don't attend these meetings.
That's my question is, what do you think is at the root of that? Because, again, we have very, very vocal taxpayer groups at the lower level. So tell us more about that.
We work very hard to try and put information out there. As I mentioned, we have a lot of information available on our website, so the public can go in and go through that at their leisure. We also have an open door policy. We have met with a number of the ratepayer groups and had conversations with them. We invite their questions. Any member of the public or an organized group wants to learn more about county operations, we're more than happy to make sure we find the right staff at the county to sit down and explain that to them. And we've received some very positive feedback by taking that approach. We are an open book. If you want to know how we're running the county, we're more than happy to share that information.
Yeah. Now, in 2016, you introduced some processes that you create a very long-term look at the budget. You do very long-term planning. And I know that the target is 2% increase, and then you have something called a dedicated infrastructure levy that you also introduced in 2016, which also is a set piece. So how close did you come in at your target, and why was that?
Okay. We've really had a focus for a number of years now on the long term. And I think that's the key to keeping a stable rate is that we always look at a 10-year horizon. We do the current year plus 9 more. It's critical to any mature organization in how we do our planning. This year we had a 2% target. Our base increase came in at 1.9, so we were slightly less. When we came back to council, we had recommended to council that the extra 0.1%, which is not a significant amount of money, that would roll into the infrastructure levy. And the reason we created the dedicated infrastructure levy is that we are chronically underfunding infrastructure, and that's not new and is not unique to Northumberland County. That is a problem across the province, and we certainly hear about that a lot in the news, and everybody is talking about our infrastructure challenges, and many municipalities have implemented a dedicated levy. We've committed to ramping that up by 0.5% each year, 0.5% on our capital budget, so that this dedicated levy is based on capital spend, not our total spend. And we know that over time we need to start to build that. And our priority right now is most of that money will go into bridge reserve. We know that we have substantial bridge needs, and that's where our priority is right now. But we know that we do have a lot of infrastructure around the county, and we need to maintain that and look to the future so that we're prepared.
So I just had a couple of calls, the one caller said his question was, are we still expecting roundabouts on Highway 2? There were supposed to be 3 of them, I guess, at Hamilton Road, Theater Road, and then at New Amherst. Are those 3 things still happening? And the other to the question of why people aren't engaged at the county level, because it never comes up in the conversation, is the response from the caller. They said, look, the reality is people will talk about their local municipal government, Hamilton Township, if they live there, or Port Hope or Cavan or any other municipal government, Colburn, but they don't really understand. And this was the response from the caller was, most people aren't aware of what the impact the county government has. They know the county government exists, but from what they're able to ascertain, they're not major players in what's going on at the municipal level. Is that a fair assessment, do you think? And is it fair to assume that, or should people be more aware of what the county's actually doing?
I think that it's often confusing. A lot of people don't fully understand which services are delivered from which level of government. And it's something that we try to educate the public on as much as we can. Many of the county services are services that we want to know are there, but we don't often use. We provide paramedic services, and most of us don't want to have to ride in that ambulance or all of the services offered by community and social services. It's only a small part of our population that really understand how those services are delivered. Long-term care and many of those things are, again, serving a small percentage of our population. And unless you are a recipient of those services or a family member is a recipient, you often don't get a full understanding of just how that works. And as with many aspects of government, it can be complicated on who does what. So it's very complicated, and often the public don't know. I know walking through my neighborhood, often I can do a 101 on the county exercise with many of my neighbors as they ask questions on just what the county does.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And again, most people, I mean, other than if you're living a relatively robust, successful life where you don't have to engage in the county, the only thing you know from the county is garbage tags, right?
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's
and county roads.
And county roads, which, thank goodness, they're getting the snow cleared. So that to the other question then about the roundabouts, do you know anything about the roundabouts? Are those still happening? Or
We did complete the environmental assessment for County Road 2, and actually we started that today. This fall, when we did the work on Elgin, that was a phase of upgrading County Road 2. There is, I believe, a roundabout plan for Theater Road. There was some amendments to the original plan, and I believe the entire environmental assessment is on the county website to look at the details. There was some public information centers for the public to learn about that, and I believe that information is all still posted for the detail. But I think we're down to one roundabout, and that really is about public safety and how we can move traffic the safest way possible and reduce those T-bone types of collisions and make sure that our roads are safe. And I know we don't have many roundabouts in this area, but there's more and more are coming in this part of the province. And I think as drivers become more accustomed to them, it is easier to navigate those.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we did get a crosswalk on that north-south egress across Elgin Street. So for Bill, one of our regular listeners out there, we're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, more of our conversation with Jennifer Moore, the CAO for Northumberland County, and Rob Washburn, as we ask you, the listeners, to consider this.
Hey, listeners, I'm Jan Sprague, and I'm excited to announce that the Jan Sprague Show has moved to a new time. Same great show for people who are seeking answers to the big questions in life. So grab a cup of curiosity and slide on over to Tuesday mornings at 10 as we hang out with thought leaders who shape our world. Tuesdays at 10, the Jan Sprague Show here at Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Start your week off the right way with a new Lunch Hour talk show right here on Northumberland 89.7. Jeff Kane presents Northumberland Focus Mondays at noon following the news. Jeff and his guests will be chatting about the important issues affecting Northumberland County, personal finance, local business, community events, and much more. That's Northumberland Focus with Jeff Kane every Monday at noon right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Northumberland 89.7 is a not-for-profit, volunteer-run radio station. We are proud of the unique service we provide to this community. If you enjoy our programming and would like to help us continue as truly local radio, you can contribute through our website. Just click on the donate button at northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back, listeners. By the way, our lines are open at 905-372-2321. If you have a call, you want to ask a question, or you just want to ask me a question, I'll ask on your behalf. Rob Washburn is in the studio with us as we discuss with Jennifer Moore, the CAO of Northumberland County. We've been talking about the budget. Rob?
Yeah, I'm wondering about, when we talked about the roundabouts, where can I go in the county to find out, for example, the priority of the roads? Which roads are at the top of a list, what are bottom of a list, so that I can see, where the county is putting its priorities? Mm-hmm. Where do I look?
Every year, that's part of the budgeting process. So our engineering department is always evaluating our roads. They go through a process on a regular basis called a pavement condition index, and that rates the condition of the roads and drives their decision-making on which roads will be looked after next. And it's certainly, they don't always just do the worst road. There's some science behind pavement preservation as well as a complete overhaul. And sometimes you want to let a road get get worse because you know you're going to have to do a substantial amount of work, where another road you can invest a smaller amount of money and extend its life substantially. So they make those calls based on that data. As part of the budget package, when you look under transportation, you can see a list of the roads that will be done for 2018. One of the largest section of road that we'll pave this year is along County Road 30. Our focus in 2017 had been some sections of County Road 2. So that moves around depending on the need each year. We pave about 14 to 15 kilometers on average. Also, as part of the longer-term budget, there's a list of the roads projects for the next 4 years. Will be in fairly significant detail to look at both roads and bridges that are in the works and in design works underway. And then there'll be some higher-level plans for the 5 years beyond that.
We didn't get a chance earlier, but what is the total budget for 2018?
The total budget is $117.6 million, so that's including capital and operating. $54.1 million of that is funded through the levy or the local taxpayer. Mm-hmm. The balance of that comes from a number of different sources, provincial and federal grants, various user fees, rents for properties, residential fees for Golden Plow Lodge residents, that sort of thing.
Now, in going over the budget, the draft budget, I noticed that, for example, there's been a $2 million increase in wages between 2017 and 2018, that there was a $1 million drop in financial services, and that social service programs went up by $2 million. That's sort of the bigger shifts that's been taking place. So could we look at each one of those, and maybe you could break it down for us? So let's look at wages. We saw a $2 million increase in wages. What has happened there that caused such a big increase?
There'll be, at any point in time, there's a number of factors going on, and that will be all salaries and benefits. So some of those increases will reflect union agreements that are already in place. There'll be things like we've already talked about the changes in legislation around minimum wage and all the other impacts. So there's a component of that. There are a couple of new positions in there. There is a cost of living increase factored into the budget for non-union staff. So that encompasses a lot of different things when you look at that aggregate number.
And the social service program expenses, it also went up by $2 million. What was at the base of that?
Social services has they have a number of changes in there. I know they're looking at some work around housing and homelessness, and there's some shifting of funds there. They're also seeing some changes in what they're setting aside for some of their longer term reserves in preparing for the future. I guess those would be some of the bigger highlights. We've also seen some changes in the programming and how we fund community and social services as the province has been uploading programs, where we've actually seen some levy reductions because they've been able to reduce that. Sometimes community and social services is somewhat deceiving because a lot of those monies are flow-through. Mm-hmm. Where we will simply be administering provincial programs. So we can see our overall budget go up, but the more important number to look at locally as far as budgeting would be the levy portion of that is funded. And we've actually seen our levy contribution to community and social services going down in recent years.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because one of the things that the current Ontario government talked about prior to the last provincial election was that they would be taking back services that had been downloaded by the province. Have we seen a substantial increase in a number of those programs being pulled back, and do we expect more?
We haven't seen more programs pulled back. 2018 is the final year of a multi-year upload that started in 2008.
Right.
So the only real component that we're benefiting from in 2018 is the final phase of Ontario Works upload that was cost shared. At this point, a larger portion of it will be funded by the province, and there's only some administrative costs and some things like that where we still cost share. A number of other social services programs are still cost sharing or are county funded, but a lot of the Ontario Works programs have now been uploaded, and 2018 will be the last year of that benefit.
Well, we know OHIP Plus kicks in this year. Is that something that's going to affect the county budget at all, the administration of PharmaCare for low-income families, for people 24 or 25 and under, actually?
It won't directly impact our budget.
Okay.
There might be some indirect benefits, obviously, for our low-income clients, but certainly nothing that we've impacted for in our budget planning.
So that's part of the flow-through then?
It would be. Most of those types of things would be funded by the province and administered by the county.
So we're looking ahead to 2018. What are the top line items for the county going forward for this year? What can we look forward to seeing?
Well, we have some neat projects underway. One of our most exciting projects is that we're continuing to move forward with the rebuild of the Golden Plow Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
We had announced last summer some conceptual drawings for the site planning. In the next couple of weeks, we'll be issuing an RFP for the architect to come on board to start the detailed design. So that's certainly very exciting for us as we move forward with that.
Do you expect to see a spade in the ground and construction start this year?
No, it will be a couple of years away from that. We'll probably be moving in around 2024. We are mandated by the province to be in before January 1st, 2025. So we're probably looking at a couple of years of design and approvals. And then a couple of years, 2 to 3 years of construction for a facility of that size.
One of the things that we've seen and we heard a lot about, and there's been a big push from various communities, and this is the idea, and again, I mentioned it to Lou as well, we're talking about tiny homes and tiny home construction and people who want to build, you know, smaller than, you know, 1,000 square feet homes. My understanding is in the county you can't build a home smaller than 800 square feet. Is that something that the county is looking at maybe changing to allow for people to build smaller dwellings?
We don't. That doesn't really fall within the responsibilities of the county. Typically, those would be in the more detailed official plans of our member municipalities.
Okay.
As well as they also have the responsibility for ensuring compliance to the building code. So
right.
Typically it would be the member municipalities that would be most directly involved in exploring those opportunities. Nonetheless, I think when we talk about homelessness strategies and housing strategies, certainly making sure that those kinds of conversations are happening so that we are open to all different types of solutions for housing.
Mm. So besides the Golden Plow, then, what else do you have on the agenda?
We are under construction for our Roseneath Joint Emergency Services Base, where we partnered with Alnwick-Haldimand. It's for joint for paramedics in the Roseneath Fire Department. So that is under construction. So we hope that by the early fall, we'll be ready to open the doors on that project. And we're also continuing to plan for a new similar facility in Campbellford. So that design work is almost complete. We're going to start this year on some of the early planning for the new Campbellford Bridge, which was approved by the provincial ministries in 2017. So we'll start that. We've had our long-term waste management master plan approved since 2014, so we'll continue to implement those initiatives. This year we'll be planning and construction of an organic transfer location so that we can roll out a green bin or an organics program in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's a lot of people that are really looking forward to seeing that, and we have our goal of waste diversion, and that will help certainly get us a lot closer to that 75% target. We've certainly continued to upgrade our drop-off stations so that we can capture more and more recyclable materials. We have some cool things going on, looking at purchasing power stretchers for our paramedics and some of the benefits that has, particularly for the health and safety of our paramedics, but also for the stability of those patients being transferred. We're going to look at our Emerald Ash Borer strategy getting approved. If, you know, that's certainly a concern across the community and the impact that that's going to have. A lot of regular roads and bridge programs in their regular maintenance schedules, some equipment replacement, and again, housing and homelessness and looking at some of the strategies there is important to the community and social services department. So we have a busy year ahead.
Mm-hmm. What about economic development?
Economic development is They're moving forward. Certainly, the Ontario Agri-Food Venture Centre is continuing to see more new clients coming in all of the time, and seeing new products being launched from that centre. A lot of excitement over the factory that was launched in September. A great uptake from small entrepreneurs and having a great facility to go in and network and work out of that. So great feedback there. Our the business entrepreneurship center continues to power ahead in the supports that they have for small businesses, and they're very successful in the clients that are coming in the ways that they support them through mentorship, and certainly extending that out to students. They've had some really great success in growing some of the small business community in the area.
Well, we know that the facility in Cramie is pretty much maxed out. Has there been discussion at the county level of maybe building a second facility, or maybe expanding the facility that's currently in Cramie?
For right now, I think that facility is running very adequately, and in maximizing that will be important to us. I think the bigger advantage there is looking at ways that we can have spin-offs from that, and,
right.
and how can we look at other ways that can contribute to the community, particularly through the agricultural community and the food sector in general.
Well, I want to thank you for being here. Our guest has been Jennifer Moore. She's the CAO for Northumberland County. How do people get a hold of you if they have any questions, or they just send an email to the county?
Everything is available on our website. All of the contact information for myself and all the senior staff is available, or if you call into the county switchboard, they'll make sure that the listeners get connected with the person that can help
them.
There you
go. And you can always be part of the public consultations when they have those listeners. I know it sounds crazy to actually show up at a public meeting, but yes, it is something you can do. I'm Dave Glover. I want to thank you for tuning in. Thanks to Rob Washburn as we bring you Consider This each and every Wednesday after the 6 o'clock news. And who's our guest next week? Rob, any idea on that one yet?
I'm working on it, Dave.
Working on it. We're working on it. Well, I want to thank you for tuning in here, Jennifer. And by the way, this song here, I don't know if you guys have heard this one yet, but this should be our county theme song. Here they are, Madman's Angel and Green Hills of Northumberland. Thanks for tuning in, listeners. I'll be back tomorrow.
I've seen the city lights, they shine so bright, you lose all sense of time. I've wandered ancient lands with castles grand, just to see what I could find. But never have I found such peace, no matter where I roam, as in the green hills of Northumberland, the place that I call home. The way the waves fall on the sandy beach, the boardwalk full of smiles, the shades of green along the countryside, the hills go on for miles. And everyone you come upon will smile and say good day. You're in the green hills of Northumberland, and you're gonna wanna stay. The market bustling with artist wares, and the farmers bring the best. The smell of fresh baked bread flows through the air, and I'm feeling truly blessed. And the music blows throughout the land like nowhere that I've known. Through the green hills of Northumberland, the place that is my home. the place that I call home.